You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's FX PhD. I'm Joe Montgomery. Mike, how's it going in Sydney?
The technology of podcasting, eh? I mean, there's about 10... when we started, there was like about two ways we could do this. Now there's about 15 different ways we can record this. And after last week, we decided to do a whole different way. And then that didn't work, so we're trying to do a whole third different way.
Having DSL issues this week. And so Mike and I decided to count each other down, but then because of the delay during the countdown, we all get messed up and we get fucked up. And we're like, okay, just start recording.
Yeah, we'll fix it in post.
So how's life without Red? You sent it in last week, right, for the revisions?
Come home, darling. Stop playing with your friends in the OC. We miss you. All is forgiven. Return home. Yes, the FedEx guys, I think FedEx is probably pretty good, but we got this thing, you know, like the tracking number, and they're like, yep, on the 25th it shipped. And then I was speaking to the guys like this morning, and they're like, actually, it's still sitting in the warehouse. The FedEx guy forgot to put it in his truck. And FedEx website's like, well, we'll get it to you like tomorrow. And I'm like, I don't think that's possible, given that it's still in the warehouse at Red in the OC tonight. So, you know, it's my new baby. There's 22X. So this is the version that's a new PL mount.
Extra special, extra improved.
We have the new viewfinder, like the EVF, because we had one before that was very kind of the guys to let us have, which we were using. And then the new sensors stuff with the improved signal-to-noise ratio, yada, yada, yada.
Oh, that'll be interesting to see, won't it?
Yeah. I really want the old one back, though. I'm kind of really fond of that first chassis.
Yeah, no. You want the shell of it? You mean?
Yeah, I was sticking on the shelf
for posterity's sake.
I don't know why.
The trophy, yes.
Yeah. Well, that'd be nice. Really. Yeah, you can have one in your office.
You become attached to it. You spent so much time with it.
Yeah, Jimmy's like, that'd be really useful when we're recording because you could just lean on it, right, and act like that was the camera, but actually it's a fake. And I was like, well, as long as we don't tell anyone, that would work.
Oh, fantastic. Sorry, someone's just beeping in on my caller ID. Threw me off. Back to analog technology. I wonder if this is the news about our space.
I beg your pardon?
I wonder if this is the news about our new space.
All right, well, why don't you go check that out, and I'm going to talk to people about what I did last night, the night before. So John, if he was listening, would remember that we did an interview in Background Fundamentals first term with a war photographer who covered Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan and a lot of war-torn and savaged areas in... And so we thought we'd follow that up this term. We want to try each term to throw the odd kind of left-to-field background in there because we want it to, you know, have some variation. And we figured that we can go off message, or I guess, or to do something unusual each term. And so how to follow that up? We actually thought that we'd hook up with the Dart Center. Now, the Dart Center is a mixture of media professionals and health workers, effectively. And the point about the Dart Center is that, well, put it this way, when there's a natural disaster or God forbid, some kind of terrorist action, we obviously anticipate that we're going to have the great men and women of the fire department and police first on the scene of the crime, right? I mean, they're the people that are going to arrive first, and they're going to be the front line, and we expect that. And hence, we're not surprised that it's, you know, important to set up some kind of counseling stuff for these people. But the other people that are first on the scene, the first response, are actually the reporters and the media people. And this is pretty traumatic, actually, for them, though we hardly ever cut them any slack in this regard. So, for example, at the Oklahoma bombings, one of the examples that were given is that, the media were there and the cameramen were having to film what was literally, unfortunately, human body parts on the trees around the bomb site. And similarly, you know, in a whole bunch of situations, they're confronted with incredibly difficult footage. Now, what happens is that this footage affects, or the events affect, the crew, and for that matter, the editors and the people who are putting it together. And there was a case that we are going to cover in this Background Fundamentals of a baby who was, her mother literally, John, stopped by a park on a sunny day with the baby in a stroller, which is a completely normal thing to do, and turned around to talk to somebody. And she didn't move from the spot. And yet, when she turned back about 2 minutes later, you know, like I'm just talking like a couple of casual things to somebody that was she did a shoelace up, and the stroller was gone. And she just started screaming and yelling, assuming that someone had, like, somehow whipped the stroller. Now, this is a completely responsible woman. This is not somebody that is in any way involved with any medication, drugs, or anything like this. It's just, this was just an accident that happens. But what had happened is that the brake hadn't taken on the pushchair or the pram, the stroller, and it actually slowly wheeled down a slight incline and then flipped into a pond. And unfortunately, of course, the poor baby drowned, strapped into this thing. It was a horrendous, horrendous thing to happen. And the reporter that covered this and the crew happened to be, because it was like almost right opposite the newsroom of this particular station, so they went out and they sort of recovered. And now the point is, not only did these people have to deal with this themselves as just human beings, they actually got hate mail for reporting it. People literally sending in emails and stuff saying, I can't believe that you filmed this mother grieving, and it says, you know, I hope you never have children, I hope you die, kind of thing. On top of all of that, the crew and the editors and stuff had to deal with the fact that they actually had footage of this poor child being pulled out of the pond, actually white. And that's incredibly upsetting. And, of course, that footage never made it to air. But
they're looking at it.
They're looking at it, exactly.
And photographing it.
Yeah, totally. And the thing is, if that event happened and it's on the news, now, obviously, you don't want, you know, if somebody is involved with, I don't know, an incident like a 9/11 or an Oklahoma bombing or a Columbine or something, you don't want them being intrusive to the grieving of the people involved. But yet, they are there. I mean, one person was talking about how they saw a woman approaching a fire. Now, they were there to cover the fire, and it was a residential fire, and they saw this woman starting to approach, and they saw going over her face, oh, no, there's something happening in my street. Oh, no, there's something happening up near my house. Oh, no, it's my house. And then finally, they were there as the chaplain from the fire department explained to her that her three children had burned to death with the babysitter. Now, and these are just horrendous stories, just even recounting them. And yet, imagine if you were there watching that happen, and then it's like, well,
happened last week here, as a matter of fact, right? About 100 miles from me in Northern Illinois University, where a guy went into a classroom at the university with a shotgun and just started shooting people up. And the same exact thing. I actually heard a very interesting article on the radio, on the National Public Radio here, where they interviewed the student reporters for the student newspaper at this place, right? So here they are, students, fairly young, right? You know, they're certainly not exposed to such horrific violence in the middle of the state of Illinois. This university is literally in the middle of a cornfield, or a lot of cornfields. But having to confront this idea of both having to report on the stuff and consider the trauma of, you know, friends and, you know, co-students going through this thing was just incredibly, obviously, brutal on them. A fact that they didn't realize the emotional toll of, while in the moment and doing the reporting and so forth, they don't really notice that because it's almost it's horrific, but you have a job to do, right? It's almost a rush of some kind.
I want somebody to report on car bombings, and I want somebody to report on, you know, terrorist actions, and I want somebody to report on the horrific nature of some of these things. I just don't want to be that person that has to do that myself, and I certainly don't want to be editing that footage and deciding what. I mean, this struck me, John, once when I was back in the days that I used to work with TV channels, that we had footage of a sporting event coming in, and a guy was weightlifting, and I think I'll probably tell the story in the background fundamentals. And this guy literally lifted up professional, you know, weightlifting event, all proper professional sports bodies stuff, lifts up the weights in the, whatever you call it, the phantom weight, the lightest weight class, yeah? And he gets the thing right above his head, and his arm snaps. Literally, his arm just snaps from the weight of it, and, of course, it falls back, and, you know. Now, he was all right. I mean, his arm was broken, of course, and it was, you know, the end of his career for weightlifting. But, I mean, I just leapt like 6 inches, maybe 6 feet in the air when I saw this footage. I mean, I nearly threw up. Like, it was just horrendous, right? And, of course, that's the sort of stuff that would never get put to air. I mean, there's no responsible broadcast in the world that put that to air. But if you're in the edit room when this stuff's coming in, you know, and I mean, that was just a guy breaking his arm. We're not even talking about a baby being pulled out of the water, having drowned. And the thing is, as I said, that not only do we not cut the media professionals any slack on this, but in the case of this woman with the baby, she got hate mail, like thousands of hate mails, for just even reporting on the story. Because people were so upset and they felt so bad about it. But they were taking it out on the reporter. Anyway, so the Dart Center tries to deal with this and address the issue that yes, there are sections of the media that are scumbags, and yes, there are sections of the media that are lowbrow, but there is a really solid set of high-end professionals with the major news organizations, the CNNs, NBCs, the public broadcasters. And even if we go back to your example, John, if you're in a local newspaper, in a local community, rural area, you have to face the fact that there's a high probability you're going to know the people that you're reporting on. You're actually going to know the family that involved in the six-car pileup where, you know, six kids were killed because they were, you know, in a car when they shouldn't have been. And that's pretty horrendous. I mean,
yeah, it's a small university where these guys were at and, you know, beat that age. And actually, it's very interesting that, you know, they're effectively journalism students, right, learning the trade, learning the craft, potentially going to classes and learning about things you're talking about. I actually mentioned to Mike the other day that I read through some of the PDFs from the center, and it's really fantastic. I kind of wish I had had that because we had these discussions in journalism school back when I was in college. But, yeah, I mean, these guys are going through this process of learning, thrust in the limelight. They're being interviewed. These reporters also effectively become the conduit for places like CNN, the BBC, you know, NBC, and all these big networks for getting the information, right? Because they're kind of clued in because, as you say, it's people they know. It's their classmates at school. So really a difficult, you know, terrible situation to be in. I think it's really be fascinating. I thought those PDFs were brilliant, really. We do, I think your point is a good one about thinking about the first responders who not only experience that and they're putting their life on the line, but then you have the second level of people who are, you know, the second responders and so forth who actually have to experience this horrific situation, and how do you deal with that? I find it fascinating.
That was such a moving...
Of just how to work as a professional in that business.
Exactly.
How do you go up and interview someone? How do you go up and interview someone who's just lost their child or has an injured child or whatever, lost their friend? I mean, you know, it's stuff that, you know, quite frankly, I think as you said, I'm happy that I don't have to deal with in my line of work.
There was a moving tale told of a woman who went into one of those shootings that... you know, and we've had them here in Australia, but this one was an American one with a college, and so they were literally one of the first people in once the police had cleared the scene, and they were walking down this desolate high school hallway, which of course is a scene of this carnage and terrible misery, and the thing that caused this reporter to basically not then sleep for the next year and a half to 2 years was that suddenly all the cell phones on the dead bodies of the students started ringing because all their parents realized right. That something had happened. And so they all start, as you would, calling your children to make sure they're all right. And so she's standing in a hallway that's otherwise just with no movement, with no noise other than these cell phones on the dead bodies of the poor students that have been shot ringing. And I mean, you know, and how do you deal with that? I mean, and here's the thing, right? Up until the Dart Center did stuff, a lot of journalists literally internalized this, and they turned to drink, they turned away from their families. I mean, there's a stunning statistic. In the 1970s in Australia, they looked at the life expectancy of the reporters that were the war correspondents and overseas correspondents for our national broadcaster. So now this is like the 70s, right? So it's obviously 30 years ago, but by the same token, it's not the dark ages. Do you want to guess what the life expectancy was of these people? Not from being killed on the job, but from either suicide, alcoholism, whatever. 49. Wow. I mean, that's like in Australia, which is like a very, you know, affluent world. So, I mean...
Right, exactly.
This is just... So I do empathize with those people that, you know, hate anyone that's intrusive in the nature of a crisis. But by the same token, you know, I certainly am one of the people that if something horrendous happens, look to the major news organizations that have coverage of it, and I'd never stop to think what a toll it must take on those individuals. So we're going to do some stuff on that.
I think that's interesting also because while not, you know, specifically related, I think what in reading through this material and talking to you about the center is that there are also some certain parallels to be drawn in post-traumatization of things as well, by the standpoint of being, of thinking through the issues of dealing with the families and the people who are involved in the process. I remember, you know, any kind of documentary or anything that has to deal with the 9/11 tragedy, the movie, whether the motion picture or whatever, the kind of things you have to examine in the ethics and the kind of way that you have to deal with tragedy is also impacted in that way. I think there's some really interesting parallels to kind of our business as well. I mean, not in the sheer emotional distress that can come from experiencing that firsthand, but understanding what that process involves and how it impacts the people surrounding that event.
Yeah, I mean, I think that editors and people involved in dealing with this footage firsthand, cameramen and stuff, that's one level, and you're absolutely right. Then there's a second level, which is, you know, even if you're doing something on an anniversary of an event, you know, looking back 1 year later at a tragedy, that 1 year anniversary is normally a very, very difficult period for the grieving relatives, and who almost exactly at a year is sort of a point where you're starting to perhaps deal with it, but then it all comes back again because of the anniversary. And and then you get to films like, the films that were actually being made about 9/11 and stuff, and how, you know, how that, and, you know, to tell you the truth, going back to a place, I know that Jeff was greatly affected when he went to New Orleans after the disaster there.
Oh, yeah, Manhattan. That was difficult for me.
And I think we can't, Jimmy in the office pointed out this is a pretty, you know, serious topic for background fundamentals. In other words, it's a fairly somber topic. But I do think that it's good that we occasionally do address some of these more serious issues, because as a community, I really don't think I've certainly seen it addressed up until now. And I think that it's easy to laugh it off. But it
ties in a lot of things related to that in discussion that come up, things like ethics as well in the business and coverage. Another interesting thing is the idea of a cameraman filming event. When do you take that camera down and help out?
That's a very good point, John.
when does that line get crossed, and when do you do it? Obviously, every individual has to make that determination themselves, you know, whether you're getting in the way, whether it's a danger to yourself, whether your purpose is better served by documenting the event. But that's always been an interesting discussion. And, man, we had some – I remember the discussion that we had in school, and actually since that point I've had with photojournalists. It's really fascinating as well. I was the one. I definitely leaned towards putting the camera down myself. But I certainly understand the intricacies of that.
It is. It's an extremely hard problem to deal with, and and let's not deny the fact that the journalists are under enormous pressure from the news organizations and the 24-hour news cycle. You know, if you are the one that puts the camera down and helps the person out of the flood waters, and somebody else gets the photo of the person in the flood waters, and you don't because you're literally saving their life, you feel better as a human being, but you may not be, you know, on the next assignment.
This is all
at a level of journalism that isn't reporting on Britney Spears and isn't discussing, you know.
No, exactly.
This is the level of journalism that, you know, these are real events with real people. And I think the other thing that's kind of interesting is to ask yourself, in your organization, if you are involved with this kind of stuff, is whether there's anything in place prior to this happening. As you know, John, I've done a bit of work with dispute resolution, and one of the big things about dispute resolution is to have a system in place before you have the dispute so that people know how to deal with it. And almost no organizations have systems in place, but a couple do. And for those few, they you know, when a big local issue breaks, like, and it was something that would be, say, a local TV station, and it's if you had a tragedy at your local level, then there are systems in place to, because the last thing you're going to worry about when that story is breaking and when all that's happening is the health of your editors, right? You're going to be like, let's get the story out.
Unless
there are some systems in place to, say, you know, monitor and sort of maybe rotate people out if it looks like it's how do you deal with the editor that's sitting there that puts the tape in the digi machine only to realize that the footage is of his neighborhood, his street, his family?
Yeah, I can't imagine that idea of you talking about watching the satellite feed of some of that stuff coming back and just being like all of us, and we're watching as spectators. It's like, how do you get out of that mode and have to do your job on top of that? And I think your point's also a good one about you talking about Britney Spears reporting. It's just like, I think in general, you know, the journalists start out, and I think always, in, you know, 99% of them intend to be serious, responsible, professional journalism. And that's, you know, covering serious events like that and informing people. And it's, you know, it is incredibly serious business, and people spend a lot of time thinking and discussing these things in order to make sure they go smoothly. And also there's good mental health after the fact. And again, I think it's going to be fascinating. I'm very much looking forward to the background class. I think it'll be a nice add.
Yeah,
and,
I
do think it's related too.
I
think it's always been great to do stuff that you think's interesting.
Yeah.
And I think for the most part, I think that's some of the stuff that we've done on FX Guy. It's like, I think that's interesting. Let's do a story about it. And it ends up being
an
individual out there.
When we did the story on the war correspondent, the photojournalist who was heading off to Iraq, we got both emails saying, you know what, this isn't really relevant to me, and people saying, would you mind if we showed this footage to a...
And the people in Iraq, or is that where you're going with that?
That's where I was going, but you tell the story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we actually got called. One of our post-grads actually ended up being shipped out to Iraq to go to service out there. And as a press person covering it for press feeds and actually for the military magazine and service out there and dropped us a line via email asking if it would be okay if he thought the class is so interesting, brought up so many interesting issues, if they could actually show it to the press crew there in Baghdad, and I think maybe Basra was, or some of them as well, but not totally certain. But I think that was fascinating. So it was nice, actually. It was kind of nice to see that it could be useful to people like that in the industry, right?
In the industry. I was going to... do this week a thing on showreels, but I've just pushed that back a week or so only because I particularly want to get some input from a third party who just happened to have had to go off for a project. So I'm just reorganizing background at the moment, but that showreel one, which I know everyone's looking forward to, isn't going away.
Well, it will happen.
Oh, no, it is. I mean, it's totally happening. It's just I really wanted to get someone involved, and they just got caught up with work, have to leave go overseas just for a week. So anyway, that's my thing. Actually, I've done a whole bunch of interesting things lately. We also went to an Autodesk presentation, which was pretty interesting. And it was interesting for a couple of reasons. One of which I found, John, is that they've moved in my geo region, which is 28% of the world for Autodesk, Mayer and Max and stuff, over into the design group.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, that's really interesting. So where does Toxic sit? Because, you know, obviously you've got – that looks a lot like a desktop-type app as opposed to a systems product like a Flame or a Smoke. And the guy I was talking to said, I really don't know, actually. And so three people later we got to, well, no, actually Toxic sitting as a special case is a niche product over in systems because it requires a lot of support and stuff, but I believe in the main geo, in head office, Chris Fanu is still looking after Mayer and Toxic.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the really interesting thing about Toxic is its tie into high-end things like Mayer.
Yeah, they're very interested in working that 3D element, I believe, into it. So it seems to be where they're taking it more and more.
But I also got the impression that there was some good stuff coming at NAB that they obviously weren't at liberty to. That Sains Oxbeer thing is just a real pain in the ass for getting anything out of people these days.
Right.
But I got the hint that there was some cool stuff coming at NAB. Have you got wind of anything?
There is cool stuff coming on. That's all I can say, right? In testing the stuff, it's like that's part of the agreement. But I think that there's also some. We're actually going to be there. And myself, Mike, and Jeff will actually be taking part in the Flame Master classes, actually, for Autodesk. Once again, FX Guide Live returns, I guess, in a small way. I suppose. It's not really, but we are the guest speakers, at least for the Flame session, I guess. So that'll be kind of fun to relive some of that on the Sunday before.
But without the sleepless nights of preparing the whole thing.
Without having to worry about putting up the banners, without having to worry about all that other stuff. Yeah, we can just come in and do the fun part, I guess it is, right? Which will be some of the greatest hits from our FX PhD courses, as well, some new cool stuff with new software as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I think they just sent out emails this week, didn't they, on that?
I don't think they've said what's in it, but they've definitely said that they're on.
Yeah.
Well, actually, where I was heading with it, that point about the Toxic stuff is that what we can talk about is that Nuke 5's come out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we got that right up and running in the forums. We were testing that beforehand, making sure the licensing worked. It was supposed to work, and it did work. And I think within the hour of the press releases, there were 5 posts in the forums. Lots of chat about it in the RC channel, and people were up and checking out. And I think we're actually kind of surprised on what a big change it was from a UI standpoint and actually having a little bit of a time finding their way around it. And that was quite interesting, actually. Quite the makeover on it. So, got, and it's not just the UI stuff, but new stereoscopic functionality in it, because of course that, you know, the number of films that are being done in 3D is growing, and I think Hollywood is viewing that at least temporarily as a way to drive people into the theaters versus downloading on the net or watching DVDs. So. That's a big factor as well. I'll be honest, I haven't had a lot of chance to take a look at Nuke 5 myself at this point, but we are planning on covering that in FXPHD and also on FX Guide as well.
One of the things that I also got into catch up with was the goss out of GDC, because we were at one stage thinking of going to GDC. We didn't because we had other commitments. But, John, one of the things that was the big trend at GDC was the move to mobile gaming. And apparently, really a huge potential growth area is perceived to be mobile gaming. So if you remember, the Nintendo came out with, like, you know, a handheld, what used to be the, like, a successor, I guess, to the Game Boy, was it?
Yep.
And that sort of opened the floodgates of a whole new wave of, and, you know, certainly my kids' Nintendo dogs and stuff is all very popular. But then with things like the iPhone and the SDK coming and stuff, the real sense that I guess a higher level of gaming is about to come to a mobile platform.
Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it, too, with there's a huge market share of the entertainment industry, the gaming industry has now. You know, it's not just the games, but the ancillary trailers that get put on the web before games come out, that just like other digital content, that makes the mobile platform seem to be the next step. Especially once the graphics display technology and UI, as you mentioned, catches up with that, as well as processors and so forth, because that's been a lot of the problem. I mean, you got to admit, in a cell phone form factor, the iPhone is actually the first one that had a really decent display.
And I'm much more likely to want to play a really cool game on there than I am watch
Lawrence. Because you're killing time.
Well, say to pick up. I was going to say, rather than watch Lawrence of Arabia as per the free ad on the Oscars.
Yes, no, but it's true. It's just like, you know, it seems like the perfect platform, so that's pretty interesting as well. Again, I think a little bit of that has been held back in the type of gaming because of the processors and the display devices out there, but that's so quickly changing. It's crazy. So we're actually doing a story coming up, too, on FX Guide, an interesting story about the creation of a trailer for a video game, too, which I think is interesting. I'm working on that because, again, as you point out, the same kind of things that are being done in their entertainment market are now being applied to the gaming market and promotion and so forth, and just the level of stuff that's going into it. A lot of compositors putting together game trailers now in the same way.
And
movie trailers get done.
Absolutely. And I'd be remiss, having mentioned the Oscars, not to sort of congratulate all of the Golden Compass winners and the crew at Pixar for Ratatouille.
Yeah, we were talking about that, too, and a little bit of a surprise, I think. I was more surprised having it won a BAFTA, right, having it won a BAFTA, so I guess that kind of sued the game. I was still shocked when they called that out as the winner, and not because of the quality of the work or anything like that, but just because, I guess, the common buzz and word of mouth, I guess, in the other films.
I thought something was really interesting is that when everyone got up to do their acceptance speech, and I take nothing away from the outstanding work that they did, I just was struck by the fact that it almost became like a company roll call. It was like, I want to thank all the people at my facility. I want to thank all the people at my facility. Yeah. And it's like, well, you know what? Really, the facilities are winning it, right? I mean, no offense to the individuals involved, because they're obviously incredibly talented. Michael Fink, those guys, just really, really good. But
yeah.
Having said that, if there was ever a category that was a collaborative event, it's visual effects, right? I mean,
yeah. You
know, the Oscar really went to the teams from not just those individuals.
Yeah, I think you made that. Yeah, they made that point too. And I think in the interview after the, you know, backstage, right, they go through and take the pictures and do quick little interviews about that, and definitely made that point. But you're right, it's not like the best actor.
No. I mean, there's a lot of people that obviously contribute to wardrobe and stuff, but right. In the case of something like VFX, you know, if a company wins, right? Because, you know, it's just such a huge number of people that go into that. And so I guess my thing is just saying that, well, I'm incredibly happy that those four individuals won Oscars. I don't want to congratulate all the people that worked on it because it really is, you know.
Oh, it's the whole pie, yeah.
Collective definitely. Win.
And actually, you know, and all three of those movies, and including many, didn't make the cut, actually, are definitely worthy of respect, right? I mean, there's fantastic work all around. So.
Totally, yeah.
I thought the broadcast was a little down this year.
Well, it was the worst worst ratings since, you know.
Yeah, was it 14% lower than the worst ratings ever?
Since like, Moses decided it was a bad idea to go out for a stroll on a rainy night. Thing is, I got to say, I can't tell you why it was, but I wasn't that enthusiastic to watch it. I was enthusiastic to watch it to a point, but then I was like watching it and doing stuff on my net, on my laptop. Unfortunately, 10 people managed to get through my email filter to tell me who'd won because we have a delayed...
I didn't. I played my part, didn't I?
If you're ever sending me an email, don't put in the subject who won. Do you know? Put Oscar results. Don't put, Golden Compass wins as the subject line.
I was chatting with Mike, bitching about the fact that they could drop the entertainment numbers. I mean, no offense to the songs that are composed for the show, but I fucking entire thing grinds to a halt during that.
Oh.
So Mike's on, like, he's like, don't tell me anything. I'm not watching. I'm watching tonight. I'm like, okay.
Mm.
I'm like, can I post on FX Guide? Don't look at FX Guide. Please, don't look at FX Guide and post something about it.
Yeah. So, well, the trouble is,
I just in general found it not as compelling, I guess, in the past, and I'm not quite sure why that was. But the writers, the content, maybe not a lot of time to prepare for it.
I had another. I mean, is that many of the films that were nominated haven't even been released here yet, right? So you know what I mean? Yeah, it's like hard to get enthusiastic about a film you haven't seen,
right?
I think that was pretty interesting a couple of years ago when they did a, I think it was Chris Rock went to a multiplex and asked people about the winning films and what they thought was the best film of last year.
Oh, that was, yeah.
Yeah, and they were all like, I think the best film of last year was Bad Boys 2. Okay. Maybe out of sync with the population here.
Yeah.
And maybe that's it. Maybe that's it.
I'm not sure. Anyway, but... I guess it ended up being a little bit disappointing all around. But again, not to diminish anything from
the winners.
The winners. And what was fascinating, I think, and I thought was totally cool, was the worldwide spectrum of actors who won the awards. And it just goes to show that this is not a United States only thing. I mean, it certainly hasn't been for years. But if you just look at the number of countries that were represented as winning Oscars. And not the United States, I guess. Pretty impressive, the worldwide film industry, especially creatively, if you're looking at really good, high-quality films.
Yeah, I think that there's some issues, and I don't know. Did Jon Stewart get flack for his coverage of it, or, I mean, presentation as, like, the host?
I don't think so. I didn't read anything. I didn't see any headlines standing out to me on some of the headline sites that I go to. I didn't see anything.
Because, I mean, it had to be better than...
I thought he's had better performances on it. I thought, personally. But I didn't see that. I'm not saying it didn't happen.
Because the one that was hosted by Letterman was pretty bad.
Yeah, Oprah Uma.
Mm.
Uma,
oh,
Oprah.
God.
So that was good.
Worst Oscar coverage ever.
And the best part is you didn't stop my TiVo while that was going.
Oh, dear. Yes, that was pretty funny.
The sling box. I have a sling box, which enables me, because I travel so much, to kind of log in and check out my... I'm not giving away my IP address, by the way. But log in and check out what's on John's TiVo. Allowing me to do stuff, and so that I can do that, and occasionally Mike will check out some of our North American television.
If I know that John's watching the football, then I run down, and during his attempt to skip through the ads, I then rewind it just a little bit, just so it's like, this remote's playing up, and it's like, I got to put new batteries in it. It's like, yeah. It took you ages to work that out, my friend.
It took me ages, yeah.
That was a practical joke that took me like an hour to play out.
Yeah, and finally Mike made some comment in iChat about what was up on the screen. I'm like, oh, damn it, that's what's it. After I rebooted my TiVo twice.
That is such geeky humor.
I'm sorry. That's a good way to go. It's a good way to run the gamut this week, I guess, in our podcast from beginning to the end.
The serious to the ridiculous to the sublime.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, I'm going to go, but as always, somebody said to me the other day, they actually came in and they saw my setup here and they're like, this is where you talk to John on the DODs from. I'm like, yes. Now I have a mental image of you with headphones on looking out the window talking to
you. Yeah, we need to do some like recordings of ourselves in front of the microphone with our hand cupped over our ear, you know, like in the old days.
Oh, yes.
This is how we were talking on the podcast. Greetings. Yes. Salutations. So, yes. Well, hopefully next week we'll have some more news and more good stuff going on. I'm itching to hopefully talk about what's happening here.
And then we get to April term, right?
Oh, and then we get to talk about the April term soon, which is coming along quite smashingly, I do say. So myself, no hints this week, and thanks to those of you who kept it under wraps. I'm amazed by... I was lurking in the IRC channel under a pseudonym. I logged in under a name, Spy. I did not. I'm kidding. To those of you who know who I'm talking, but no, I did not do that. But they were like, we can't say it, and it won't happen again. So everyone was pretty cool about it. So quite excited.
Well, either that, John, or no one actually.
I'm really excited, but I can't say what I'm excited about.
Oh, really? I was going to say maybe nobody actually made it to the end of the podcast.
No. It was interesting. The IRC channel after it, you know, I post that and people start watching, and so it's kind of lurking in it. So I'm like, oh, that's really exciting. About what? I can't really say. Just listen to the podcast.
Yes. This is the secret goss. The secret sauce about getting ahead in PhD is listen to the end of the DODs. I need to
listen to those more often.
I need to pay attention.
And that's it. I better go. I get stuff to do.
I want
to
go buy one of those new Macs. I want the new MacBook Pros.
Oh, I'm trying to get Mark to buy my old one off me so I can buy the new one.
Oh, I'm going to give Matt my old one and get a new one. He
nice.
Needs a laptop.
Good call.
We've been... Yes, we've got a new producer joining us, and so he's going to get my hand-me-down. It's a good 7-inch.
It's a hand-me-down.
It's a perfect 7-inch. It's just because of the RED footage mainly, I just need the biggest friggin' hard drive I can get in that sucker that runs at 7200, because the number of times I'm on location or something with my laptop and I want to run up some RED stuff and I just need the most performance I can get out of a RED. And it's always
my laptop.
I can send
you some stats because it's actually quite interesting. The 7200 is not that much faster in the grand scheme of things than the 5400. I'm actually going to send you some links. I was going to get a 7200 drive, and they basically kind of said, it's not that much faster. It has something to do with the spin speed and most of your data is in the middle kind of thing. It really only has an impact at a certain point. Anyway,
really?
I need those links. It's fascinating. We were actually talking, it was several months ago, actually, we were chatting about it in the IRC room as well. There were some people who are far geekier than I am regarding that. But I'll try and run up those links because you know why I'm telling you this? Because I know how quickly you run out of hard drive space, right?
Oh, yeah.
And like me. I'm not just saying you. I'm like, I'm speaking
of which,
the largest drive.
Do we need to
possible.
Still get you that 75, that 750 gig
yeah,
drive?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Yeah, please.
I'll get onto that today. Here's the other question. Would you notice the difference between a 2.6 gigahertz and a 2.5 gigahertz, and is it worth $250 for the difference?
I would say no.
It's hard. I mean, I think RAM,
I think it would be hard to tell the difference. Load that baby up with RAM.
I'm sticking everything I can get in that sucker, baby. 4 gigs. I get 50 gigs
it,
in there.
Take it to the top of some cellophane if you have to.
I want
to,
like...
RAM, that is one RAM. Yeah, well...
Gaffer tapes it on the side.
If anyone has any suggestions, post in the forums if you think. But again, I'll try and wrangle up those links, and I found it quite
recommend Mike's new laptop.
I so quickly went and dropped out my 200 gig drive and put in the 350 gig drive in my laptop after reading that article. I'm like, I didn't want the 100 gigs extra. So
that isn't even an option on the Apple site. On the Apple site, to go to 300
gig. Oh, I know.
Gig.
I bought it third party. I bought it third party and installed it. So
you're such a geek.
I'll hook you up at NAB.
Really? I don't know. I just get images of us spending the whole time at NAB trying to get my laptop to work again. like when we upgrade it to the latest version.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, my God. Yeah, sorry. I put that on my mind.
Yeah, forget that.
Oh, well. I'll send you the link, and again, if anyone has anything to contribute in the forums, please do, if anyone's listening.
Please. Please. Please, before I hit the add to cart buy button on my Apple thing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
All right, man. Well, have a good week, and I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, man. See you later.
Bye. I'll talk to you before that, but you know what I mean.
Okay. Bye. See you guys. Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.